Gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. It is I, Michael, and I am being joined by our good friend from Hockey Hot Stove, our good friend Ted Starkey. And Ted, I am so sorry. It is hot as hell outside. I am sweating to death in my room, which is why I'm not wearing a jersey for those watching on YouTube. I'm wearing this tank top from Burt Bench Clears. I'm not giving you a hug. I'm sorry.
Too sweaty for a hug.
Yeah, it's way too sweaty for a hug. But, you know, we have a lot. And before we, Bench Clears is not an affiliate of ours or a sponsor. I just find it very comfortable. But the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both txhthockey.com and in the YouTube show description to get a $20 discount on Oats Overnight today. It's definitely not too hot for Oats Overnight. So with that, this is part two of the season finale. We already did part one a couple weeks ago with Tora Masamune. We got a lot to talk about hockey-wise, specifically Washington Capitals-wise. There's a lot of things that the Capitals have done in the last several weeks since I recorded that part one episode with Toru. Starting off with the Washington Capitals signing Spencer Carberry to a contract extension. It's a multi-year deal. Carberry was entering the last year of his current deal. What are your thoughts on Carberry getting the extension now and in a way getting it out of the way?
I mean, it was a little interesting because obviously usually coaches don't like to go in the last year of their contract. You know, with that, just because there's a lot of uncertainty going forward next year. Reportedly, they basically ripped up the last year of his deal and instituted this new one that has him among the highest paid coaches in the league. Obviously, last year was a disappointment for Washington. You know, and now it's going to be interesting because we have the opposite problem for him because, you know, certainly the expectations are going to be very high this year. And if they don't live up to the expectations, he's going to be under the microscope again. I mean, you know, first couple years, you know, obviously the first year he came in, they snuck in the playoffs, but there wasn't a lot expected. Second year, when the Eastern Conference regular season title, and you know, again it was unexpected. But this year they certainly took a step back. You know, certainly the roster wasn't as good this year, this past year, but obviously that's not going to be the case next year because you know they spent about 30 plus million dollars to improve. And, you know, there's going to be higher expectations. You know, they were talking about a Stanley Cup run today at the press conference. So it's, the expectations are going to be much, much higher next year.
Yeah. And, what are some of the things with this extension for Spencer Carberry that, you know, he needs, you know, he has the contract. What are some of the things he needs to improve upon from this past season going into this upcoming season? Because as you mentioned, this season was, you know, as Ted Leoza said in the press conference, reintroducing Alex Ovechkin, we'll get to that in a little bit, was that it felt a little empty not being in the playoffs. So what type of improvements do you think Carberry is going to be making going into next season?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the power play is going to have to be better because, you know, that, part of the reason they missed the playoffs is the power play has been, you know, they finished 25th last year overall, and they just were not very consistent. You know, obviously they changed out Kirk Muller on the coaching staff, but, you know, at some point the personnel wasn't quite up to snuff. This year they won't have that to fall back on if it doesn't do well. You know, the power play has to produce. I think one of the things with Washington's power play is it's so static. And it's relatively easy to defend because it's pretty predictable, and they're going to have to figure out a way to keep the skaters moving, keep the goaltenders moving, and not make it so easy for the penalty killers to turn it around. But I think that's the big one. I think obviously the big issue with Washington last year is they really needed a top six, and they ended up getting not just one but two more, plus with Ovechkin back. Like I said, the higher expectations with the team now are going to be what's defining Spencer Carberry. This is not the first part of his contract where, this is a we're rebuilding, we're retooling to get back to where we want to be. Now they are where they want to be, so now they have to produce.
Yeah, and for those, Kirk Muller was replaced by Ray Bennett, who spent the last season with the Islanders, but spent a good amount of time with the Colorado Avalanche and was the power play coach when they won the Stanley Cup in 2022. So we're bringing somebody in who's actually won a cup as a power play coach in the NHL level and has worked with the talents of like Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Gabriel Landeskog. So, having. Going from those guys to an Alex Ovechkin is a pretty big it's a pretty big deal for him, for the power play. We mentioned the offseason moves. We'll talk about the draft first. The Capitals only had four draft picks. Their first round pick, which they used number 18, which they got from the Ducks in the John Carlson trade, they used on Oliver Kvanttu. I hope I said that correct. I'm still trying to learn the kid's name. Real quick, we actually got permission to do this. So everyone, we're going to send it over to Jeff Merrick of the Sheet and Daily Faceoff to tell us about the draft pick the Capitals made in the first round.
Oliver Svanto is a big 6'3", 210-pound center who loves physical play. Power forward. He has the body and mindset to push pace physically. And even as a young 17-year-old, played in the Finnish Pro League against men this year and more than held his own. And while the offense wasn't there, scoring only 2 goals in 48 games, the compete level certainly caught scouts' eyes.
Oliver Cervantes is one of the most mature players in this draft class, both physically and on the ice. He's a load to handle at the net front, really difficult along the wall, and he's able to get off of the wall and into the middle of the ice. I loved his game at the World Junior Championship. He was the youngest player on the team, and he played a key role for the Finns, centering, taking big faceoffs, big defensive zone draws, playing some time on the power play as well. The offense didn't pop, but I think he really endeared himself to teams at that point. I'd hoped to have seen more offense from him this year to really project him as a top six option, but that just hasn't been the case. You have to go all the way back to his U18 year to see some real point totals, and I think that is going to limit him long term here, but again, big, strong, physical center in a class that was light on centers. It makes sense why he went in this spot, and I think that there is a legit bottom six upside with just a little room for improvement.
Oliver Svanto from Tappara of the Finnish Liga, drafted.
And a huge thank you to Jeff Merrick of The Sheet and, of course, Daily Faceoff, which that clip and audio comes courtesy of. And the first pick that the Capitals made was Oliver Suvantu. I don't know how I completely screwed that up. Actually, I do. I didn't have the name in front of me at the time when I did it. What are your thoughts on Oliver and him being selected by the Capitals in the first round?
Well, it's a rare Finnish appearance. I believe it's been 3 years since the Capitals had any kind of Finnish player on the roster. Clearly, obviously, the 18th pick, it's going to be, a couple years down the road. But centers are valuable. The one thing the Capitals right now are thin in is probably center. But obviously, this is not going to be a situation where he's coming up before, 2028 or 2029. And 18th picks are, once you get out the top 10, you get a little bit more project type picks. He's a pretty good player, but he's got to adjust his North American style. He's only 17 at the moment, so it'll be interesting to see how he adjusts. I mean, like you were saying before, the draft before the Caps traded away their 16th pick, which was their own pick, and they used the 18, which they got from Anaheim, for John Carlson. So all in all, not a bad pick. They were able to parlay one of the top first rounders into Jordan Kyrou in that trade to St. Louis. And they used the other pick for a prospect who could help him down the road.
Yeah, so there are three other picks made. They're much deeper in the draft. We're not going to focus too much on we're not going to focus on them at all. Obviously, Savantu was the first overall. There is a little bit more information that we could pull up on him. And again, thank you to Jeff Merrick and Daily Faceoff for allowing us to use the video and audio for the podcast. Which, by the way, The Sheet is such a great podcast. I enjoy it. So you mentioned Jordan Kyrou. Caps traded the 16th overall pick in the draft, along with Connor McMichael and one other piece, to St. Louis for Jordan Kyrou. When you look at Kyrou, yeah, he had a bit of a down season, but at the same time, the entire St. Louis Blues organization had a down year last season. What are some of the things that you see in Jordan Kyrou that he's really going to bring to the table for the Capitals, and maybe what improvements he's going to bring to his game in general now that he's with the Capitals and on a much more stacked team than, say, the St. Louis Blues?
I mean, I think he brings some speed to the team. I think that's probably his biggest benefit. The Caps were tied to him last year. They didn't get a deal done at the deadline, but he was certainly one of the players that was rumored that they were interested in. I think last year, I think like you were saying, St. Louis had a rough year last year, and I don't think he was as productive as he'd like to be. I mean, I think one of the advantages he has coming to Washington, obviously with Ovechkin back and then Alex Tuch coming in, is he won't have to carry the load. Obviously now the Caps seem to have a little bit of abundance in top six talent, whereas last year they were basically short at least one throughout the year, and two when Leonard was out, and they really were thin on up front. But now you have not only him, you have Tuch, you even have Boone Jenner coming in to really increase the depth. So I think he can afford to be kind of streaky. Obviously he had a couple 30 goal seasons before last year, and they won't have to overly rely on him for extra production. But certainly I think one of the things they were talking about today is the depth. They wanted four lines that could score, and he really helps that towards that goal.
Yeah. And unfortunately you give up Connor McMichael in the trade. I know from a lot of comments I've seen, some text messages I've gotten, there's a lot of heartbreak over McMichael being traded. But it's a good move for the Capitals to move on from McMichael and eventually later on Hendrix LaPierre as well. To get Jordan Kyrou, make some of these other moves that we'll discuss in a moment, because now this gives McMichael an opportunity at a fresh start. Because after having a breakout season during the 24-25 season, he didn't have that same impact this past season during the 25-26. Do you think that it could be like maybe it's, the change of scenery was the right time for Connor McMichael in that regard?
I think, for Washington, I would say, obviously McMichael was a very good player. I'm not sure what his ceiling would have been with the Caps. I don't really think he was going to crack the top six. You're basically talking about a third line center. And, the thing with Kyrou, obviously you're not acquiring a guy for 1 or 2 years. You're acquiring a guy with a couple of years left in his deal. So it's not like you're going to be short on forward in a year or two. You're basically replacing a guy who's probably a third line center for a while with a guy who's a top six. Obviously the money's different, but I think they kind of knew too that they were going to be overly aggressive adding guys. Obviously they went even further than I thought they might go in terms of adding players. Obviously in the end they ended up adding Boone Jenner, for a short term deal. So I think that, obviously they knew what was coming, they knew what they were looking for, but I think they traded a guy with a ceiling that they hoped for another guy who, obviously is top six and hope can get to a 30 goal plateau again.
And then speaking about that top six, you bring obviously McMichael gets traded for Kyrou, but then immediately the very next day, it's the sign-in trade bringing in Alex Tuch. That right there makes it very, very difficult for McMichael to truly crack the top six at that point now, because you got Kyrou, you got Tuch, Ovechkin's obviously back. We'll talk more about that. When you see Alex Tuch coming in, oh, by the way, that was the greatest line everyone made when David Kampf was part of the trade. Wait, David Kampf was on the Capitals? Yes, he was. I think he played like four games. But When you, I feel bad for Cam because he bounced around a lot last season too. But when you look at Alex Tuch, he's a big guy. He's like a power forward type. He didn't have the strongest playoff for Buffalo, but we all remember the save that was done to him by Holtby in the Stanley, in game two of the Stanley Cup final in 2018. He had a very good playoff run that year too, which was his rookie year. When you look at Alex Tuch, what are some of the tangibles that you are looking forward to seeing him bring into the Capitals game?
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of similar to Kyrou. I mean, I think he adds a little bit. He's probably a little bit more dynamic and uses a little bit more strength than Kyrou does. But he's been a solid forward for Buffalo. He was part of the Jack Eichel trade going from Vegas to Buffalo. He's from Central New York, so he was a Sabre fan growing up. Yeah, the rumor up obviously up there where the talk was he going to leave with the Sabres having a resurgent season? And it just didn't seem like it was going to work out. The Capitals, again, it's another 30 goal scorer. How will he perform with, obviously, Buffalo had a good lineup, but now Washington's got a much deeper lineup than Buffalo had last year. But he's another talented guy. He's the assistant captain with the Sabres too, so he adds a little bit of leadership as well. I talked about Boone Jenner earlier, but not only does he offer his talent, he offers leadership in the room. And I think he's another weapon. I mean, I don't think the Capitals added just one guy with potential to score 30. They added two or three. So it's kind of spreading the wealth rather than kind of putting your eggs in one basket. And I think obviously, I know there was talk about the contract, and obviously with the amount of years, but I presume that the reason it got done for Washington was, basically they pushed the cap hit a little bit back to get the average net lower, and obviously the sign-in trade was essential to do that because had they waited till July 1st, the equivalent contract would have been 6 years instead of eight, and then you're talking $14 or $15 million a year, which is obviously a lot different than 10.5, because 10.5 in a couple of years is probably going to be roughly equivalent to an eight or a nine, not overly terrible. So, but it was a surprising ad because obviously, in a very thin UFA market, he was probably the best forward out there, and the Caps landed him for a relatively low cost. So it was another good move after talk about last year. Give credit where credit is due. Last year, Patrick, I didn't think did a whole lot to improve the club, and this year, or this past month, he's done a lot to improve the club.
Yeah, and to put piggyback off of the one thing for Tuck, one of the key things there for him was, and he even said it, was the eighth year was very important for him. And I think that was it. So no matter what, Tuck, I think, would have gone in a sign-in trade for that reason. And because he was going to go for 8 years, but the fact that and here's the thing. Because we're talking about the guys the Caps traded for. Like, technically, yeah, they did sign Alex Tuch. But Buffalo really did, and then traded the contract to the Capitals. Both of these guys wanted to come to Washington. Jordan Kyrou had to waive a no-trade clause to come to Washington. Alex Tuch needed to agree to even talk to the Capitals to negotiate the contract that he would sign with the Sabres to then be traded to the Capitals. And that speaks volumes for the Capitals in a time right now where we see the stuff about Dylan Larkin, three or four team trade lists, Florida, Minnesota, Dallas, and Vegas, and then Brady Tkachuk, four teams, but realistically only wanted to go to Florida. So when we have these guys who are putting in saying, oh, we only want to get traded to these three to four teams essentially, it speaks volume when Kyrou waives the no trade clause and Alex Tuch does want to talk to the Washington Capitals and be, in both in this case, be traded to the Washington Capitals. So.
Yeah, and then like I was saying before too, I think the key for Washington was getting the deal, because obviously that allowed them to have the two extra years on the contract and not have to basically put in they didn't have to put that same amount of money in a 6-year deal, which the annual would have been a lot higher than it would have been.
So then going into the actual offseason, the Caps made a bunch of signings. The two big ones was forward Boone Jenner, the former captain of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who now I want to notate this now. Kyrou is going to wear 25. Tuck is going to wear 89. Boone Jenner is going to wear 22. It was just announced today, ironically, after the Ovechkin press conference. And they also signed defenseman Vincent Desharnais, who will wear number 73, last worn by Connor Sheary. And then they also signed some depth signings like Justin Hall, who's a defenseman, Johnny Brodzinski, who's a forward, and a couple other guys. Jenner obviously will plug probably in, and here's the thing, I'll post it eventually in sometime in September when I start releasing the team previews. I have Boone Jenner on the fourth line, and I have Merezhchenko on the fourth line with Sordiff as the center, and it's essentially Beauvillier and Jenner rotating in and out of that fourth line. Because one of the things I noticed, and I told this to you when it was happening, was the moment that Ethan Frank came out of the lineup and Ivan Merezhchenko came into the lineup, the Capitals started to play a lot better. That was the beginning of when the team started playing better going down the stretch. And then the next piece was Cole Hutson coming into the lineup. And then after that, it was, Ilya Protas. Those three guys need to be in the lineup. So, that's why I have Jenner on the wing with Beauvillier kind of rotating in and out of the lineup because, you got to have the guys who were boons of, I mean, unless they have bad camps. That's the only way I can see Merezhchenko not with the Capitals is if he has a bad camp. These are guys you got to play. And then the signing of Vincent Desharnais, this is the one was listening to his presser today, his media availability today, so I had it fresh in my head. This was this one signing I was kind of like scratching my head going, why? I understood Johnny Brodzinski and Justin Hall because those are depth guys. Justin Hall is somebody who can be in the press box while we wait for Sandin to come back. Brodzinski, another guy who can be in the press box, healthy scratch, gets put in the lineup. He'll probably be with Hershey now with the Jenner signing, but Desharnais, and he open, and I'm glad that he openly admitted to this. If you look at the one calendar year, he was on four teams. He was with Edmonton during the 22, the 24, no, the 23-24 season, went to the cup final with them. Then he signed a contract with Vancouver, a 2-year deal with the Canucks, was traded after 30 plus games to Pittsburgh. And then was traded after, I think, 10 games to San Jose. And that was all in one calendar year. And that makes you wonder what is wrong with the player that made him get moved around as much as he did. Edmonton not wanting to re-sign him after that cup final run in 2024, and then getting moved right away by Vancouver, going to Pittsburgh, and then being moved by Pittsburgh, and then playing for San Jose for essentially the last year and X number of games. So that gave me a lot of pause, but there were things that he said in his media availability that I liked, which was the fact that, he's being brought in to play a very specific role, and that role is to be a defensive defenseman and to just clear the net and be a defensive defenseman. What are your thoughts on both the Jenner and the Desharnais signings?
Well, I think Boone Jenner, the big thing he offers is going to be leadership. Obviously he's Columbus's captain. Like he's probably is going to be a fourth line center, but I think he's happy to do it on this roster. He's been in Columbus and obviously they've had their ups and downs over his tenure with them. This kind of gives him a chance to win. He doesn't have to be quite the player he was in Columbus, but he's a solid guy in the room, and I think they were happy to be able to sign him. He's kind of a depth plus forward. He's a talented guy. He did hit, he's got a couple 20 goal seasons and certainly can put the puck in the net and kind of adds a little bit more legitimacy to that bottom line. I think Desharnais, Brian McClellan, President of Hockey Operations said it today. They were looking for a physical type defenseman, and like you were saying, he fits that role. I mean, and we were talking about the contract. I mean, it's a 4.2 million cap hit, which again, in this, changing environment, 4.2 in a couple of years, basically 5 million is going to be the median contract. You can carry 23 guys with $5 million. So a 4.2 million hit, it's a little bit more than depth, but it's not a whole lot more. And clearly it's a contract that probably will be more portable down the road than it is at the moment. But the thing is too is he kind of fills a role because the injury to Rasmus Sandin, he's probably going to be gone for most of the season. But by the time the playoffs roll around, presumably he'll be back in the lineup, and so it adds a little bit more depth. So kind of he's kind of a Band-Aid plus, kind of a depth plus kind of guy. He's not overly pricey on your cap, but he'll be able to fill a role and, kind of be more physical defenseman. It's kind of ironic the Caps have so many guys up front who are over 6'4", and they need a little bit more grit on the back end, especially presumably, I'll be interested to see what happens with Dylan McIlrath next year. Obviously Trevor Van Riemsdyk is gone. So, I think it's just add a little bit of grit to the back line, probably a little bit more pricier than a depth guy, but in essence, that's what it is.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is and I have to rework the D pairings just slightly. Not as much as I had to for the forwards, but for the D pairings, I know everyone is doing their mock D pairings, but there's something that everyone's getting wrong. Everyone's putting Cole Hutson with Martin Ferravari, or they're putting him with Vincent Desharnais. No. You need to keep Cole Hutson with Matt Roy because the way Hutson plays, Roy is the perfect foil for him from what we have seen in those games. Ferravari needs to be with Chychrun. I'm sorry. Ferravari as a D partner, the Chychrun is the smartest thing you can do because of how defensive minded he is. And he technically is your top pairing defenseman. Matt Roy is your second pairing defenseman. And I see Cole Hutson, especially with Sandin out. And it looks like Sandin will be back late February, early March, which is probably around the trade deadline. So maybe that's something where Sandin comes back after the deadline because that's when the roster limits loosen. And with the timeline of the surgery and the recovery, it makes a little bit of sense that way. I probably have Desharnais with Timothy Liljegren on that third pairing right now. Maybe rotate Justin Hall in there. So, what are your thoughts when you look at some of those D pairs?
No, I agree with you on with Hutson. I think you have to pair him with someone who's defensively responsible because Hutson essentially plays as a fourth forward, and you really have to have someone who's a stay-at-home guy with him. You really can't pair him with another offensive-minded guy because that's just going to leave you a lot of chances going the other way. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, no, I think it'll be interesting too because you mentioned obviously Sandin will be back later in the year, and the Capitals. Even with the Ovechkin deal, they're still under the cap. They don't have to worry about moving anyone yet. Although I do think, I think probably before opening night or very early in the season, there'll probably be a couple more deals coming down just to kind of give them a little bit more room.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned that because I was just listening to the season finale of 32 Thoughts, which, by the way, it's a 4 hour long podcast. You have been warned. Just look at the timestamp to find your team. That's all I'm saying. And when I listened to the Capitals portion, because that was the important one for today's episode that we're recording, something that Elliot Friedman brought up, which was very interesting, was is that Charlie Lindgren's name was out there. And the key word there is the word was. And he said that his name isn't being put out there now because Lindgren is viewed as important to the success of Logan Thompson. I agree with that to an extent, but the Capitals also have a major decision that they have to make in regards to Clay Stevenson, who is going into the last year of his contract. is not waiver eligible or anymore, so he has to clear waivers just like last season. Could that be potentially one of those moves that they make? Or in theory, say it's like Beauvillier or Ethan Frank who get moved. And Ethan Frank is at 2 million, Anthony Beauvillier is at 2.75, Charlie Lindgren's at 3 million, and Clay Stevenson's at 825K. So in theory, could the Capitals, to protect Clay Stevenson, have three goalies like the way Buffalo did last season, which they're obviously not going to go back to, the way Carolina did, which, I mean, hey, it did lead them to a Stanley Cup carrying three goalies. Could that become a viable option, or do the Capitals have to make that difficult decision and say we have to trade Charlie or we have to trade Clay because we can't afford to lose either of them via waivers?
Well, I think the fact with, we were talking about the roster depth, that kind of precludes, basically, if you protect three goalies, you're going to lose one of your forwards. And so that kind of undoes what you did over the summer. So, I mean, I think in my personal guess, I'm not basing this on anything I've heard, but my guess is they probably didn't like what they could get back for Lindgren. So, obviously the Kyrou deal. You had McMichael going instead of saying adding a goaltender. Obviously Buffalo maybe not have wanted Lindgren, but I mean they're going to have to
No, they
expose
want
one of.
Connor Hellebuyck. Come on now.
Yeah, but I mean like they gotta they're gonna there's no way at 3 million Lindgren's not surviving waivers either, so they're going to have to figure out which goalie they're going to move because 95% chance that. One of those two is going to be selected by someone else. And it's, Stevenson is probably too good a goaltender to lose for nothing. So, my guess is they're going to wait till camp. Obviously, there could be injuries on other teams, which makes Lindgren's value go up or even Stevenson's value go up. But I do think that, I don't think there's any shot they're going to carry three goalies because they don't have the roster room to do that. You can do that when you're a team that doesn't necessarily care about losing someone on your fourth line. But
Ethan
now,
Frank.
right. Well, I mean, I think even then, they may end up moving one of those guys before anyway. Again, it could be a matter of, which teams need help up front. And, at this point, they probably didn't like the returns they could get or the teams they wanted to do it or deal with didn't really care too much about getting those players, but before the opening night roster, you could always move guys around, and guys have injuries. Even the Caps could, if they get injured in during training camp, that kind of buys them time. If one of the goalies gets hurt, that kicks the can down the road till when they come back. So they may opt to say, let's carry three into camp, see what happens here, see what happens elsewhere. And then you go from there. But yeah, no, I don't think three is an option for when you're as many players as Washington does that they want to keep. It's a no-brainer to move one of the goalies, potentially probably for a pick, because I don't think that they want to add another roster player back on, because I think they're pretty much full at this point.
And just to let you know, as this is happening, the president of the Ethan Frank fan club is threatening my life. Just kidding. Sorry, I just can't help the fact that when Miro came into the lineup and replaced Frank, the team just played a lot better. I've also never been fully sold on Ethan Frank as a whole. Like he hustles, but like there's just, you know how like when you watch a guy and like everyone raves about him. But as you're watching him, you're just trying to figure out what it is that everyone likes that you just can't pick up on. Like, it's kind of like that with me sometimes. You can't pick out every little nook and cranny of every player's game, you know? But also,
But
when
yes,
another
again,
guy comes in the lineup and replaces you and the team plays a lot better, that also speaks volumes right there, too.
I mean, Frank is a guy that coaches love just because they work hard. They put a lot of effort in. They may not be the most talented, but as I said, a roster like Washington's now is just, guys like Frank and Beauvillier, you just wonder if they're going to be on the roster or, they'll be asked to go down to Hershey, see if they clear waivers too. But at this point, like I said, they basically they're pretty much stacked with what they want. And I think they're going to do a lot to try to keep the players they assembled. So obviously it even got, on the back end, you look at Dylan McElrath. Obviously he was captain of Hershey. He was basically a spare part on the cap. So you wonder, is it going to be the
I
case
could
with him?
see him jokingly stay on because you had mentioned Desharnais 6'7". The Protas brothers are 6'6" each. Tuck and Wilson are 6'4". I think Ovi's kind of up there too. You have all these big guys, and it's like we jokingly call the Protas brothers and Tom Wilson the hunk of meat line. Well, what is it? McElrath's what, 6'5"? This is the hunk of meat lineup right
Right,
here.
yeah.
Even if McElrath's in the press box, it's like this is the hunk of meat lineup, because of how big they got. Like, I
Yeah,
think the
no, I mean,
smallest players on the team,
like I said,
I think the smallest
I was
players
just
on the
gonna say,
team are Sandin, Frank, and Hudson. I think those are the three smallest guys on the team.
yep. Yeah, no, I mean, and I just think that, I think, they got some decisions to make, but I think they said they'll see what camp is like, see who's coming in with injuries, and if anyone gets hurt, they may opt to say, well, we'll carry three goalies into the end of September and see, someone tweak something before the regular season, and then we could put one on, have one injured and then put him in. But I think they were lucky last year that Stevenson passed waivers, and I highly doubt either of the two goaltenders would pass waivers just because Lindgren's $3 million salary is no way discouraging other teams to pick him.
Yeah. And interestingly, obviously Hendrix Lapierre, Connor McMichael were both restricted free agents this summer. McMichael has filed for arbitration with St. Louis. Hendrix Lapierre signed a 2-year deal with the Pittsburgh Penguins, who the Capitals traded to. Lapierre was on that prove it contract. He didn't really prove much in a lot of the ways that we were hoping he would prove it. One restricted free agent that I was genuinely surprised did not get a qualifying offer was Garren Bjorklund, who some were saying was playing better than Stevenson in Hershey. And this is what I've heard from like some Hershey Bears season ticket holders and stuff like that. Where do you see maybe Garren Bjorklund landing, and could he potentially get signed? Maybe, as you had mentioned to me, maybe the QO was just a little too expensive for him. Maybe sign him to a little bit more friendlier deal for him to continue to develop in Hershey a little bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. People forget that that's basically an NHL deal, in terms of, his contract. But they could still sign him into an AHL deal if he wants. And basically, he could still play in Hershey, and then if Washington wanted to call him up, and then again, this could go back to the goaltending. In terms of how many do you have? Obviously the South Carolina guys weren't retained. Hershey may also have an idea of who they want in net last year. Hershey basically, with their arrangement with Washington, they basically picked some players who they want to win. Hershey had, they won one round this year, lost to Wilkes-Barre in the second round. And kind of a disappointing year for the Bears. Now, they may want the Caps to upgrade. They'll get a couple of those guys that you were talking about, the depth guys. They may have 1-year deals, but the Washington has no problem spending that money to send them down to Hershey. So they may have an idea for goaltending. But like I said, there's guys on AHL deals. It will depend on Stevenson, because if Stevenson goes elsewhere, then they're going to have to fill that spot in Hershey if they end up keeping him. So
Yeah, because
we'll
you know
see.
one of the goalies will be Mitch Gibson. We already know that is one of the goalies.
Yep.
So, but yeah. So, Starkey, buddy, old pal. It's the off season, air quotes. As you
Tank top season.
as I'm quoting you in your text message to me, there is no off season, because this is the last episode until September. How are you going to enjoy your off season? Air quotes.
Probably enjoy. Probably keeping track of, with a little bit of break, but obviously it was a It's going to be an interesting offseason going into next year, especially for Washington, because, I think they're done signing and trading for major parts. There's still going to be some minor deals. And, like we were saying with Hershey, they're going to look for some guys to, make a run next year at the Calder Cup. So, but, this, the interesting question is this the most talented Capitals roster ever? And it's pretty close. I mean, I was looking today, probably the latest time that they were this good was probably 2016-17. They added Shattenkirk at the trade deadline. That was a pretty stacked roster going to playoffs. Of course, they didn't win that year, so it didn't always necessarily mean that much, but
Yeah, there's just
obviously.
this team called Pittsburgh that kept getting in the way.
Well, you look at you look at the Caps history between probably 80 1985 86 team lost in the second round of the Rangers. That was one, that was a Hall of Fame studded roster. You look, some people have said 89 90 was the most talented. I know you love 97 98, but I wouldn't put them talent wise. I mean, obviously, that was a great run on Ole Kolzig, but and you have like 08 09 and then 16 17. And this next upcoming year, it's potentially the most talented roster they've ever had. It may not be definitively the most talented, but you can pretty make a pretty good argument for it.
Now, with that, I loved how I asked you a question like we're ending the show. We have one
Well,
more
this
thing to
is what
talk about because you just led it right up to
this is what you
Ovechkin.
have most. You
What?
basically gotta learn about cliffhangers.
Yes,
You could answer
exactly.
this in October.
But the thing is,
So you have
though,
3 months to think about it.
yes, that part's the stuff you have 3 months to think about, everybody. But with the stuff that you just said is a big factor of why Ovechkin came back. That and the fact that his wife said he could play for one more year.
Well, I mean,
But
like, I from getting the sense today, I think there was very little chance he was retiring from the NHL. And I'm not even sure he's leaving after this year. I mean, I kind of wondered if he would say anything regarding his future. And, he talked about the 1 and 2 year deal. And my suspicion is the reason they did a 1 year deal is they could keep the cap number under what they needed to move somebody. Obviously, they signed him to a 1 year, $9 million deal. Someone was going to have to go. This way, they didn't have to do it, and they can always do this haul again next summer.
yeah.
Obviously, the 4.75 hit next year, cap is going up anyway. But
Think
then you could do
another
the other.
8 million it's going up by? I think it's like another 8 million
It's
again.
going to be 120 in 2 years. So
Yeah.
you're basically talking, obviously, I think they were saying that Washington's going to have between 8 and 9 million in overages next year, between some of the rookie contracts and stuff like that. But it's a difference of, I think he signed the 1 year because it was easy, because you didn't have to trade anybody to make it fit. They basically deferred everything they needed to next year that would have sent them over the cap. And
Yeah.
so, but again, this is stuff you can think about for 3 months and you can discuss in October.
And but and we want to throw it on this because we need to actually do a little bit of Ovechkin talk. There was a question that was asked him because they did air it live on Monumental Sports Network on the actual cable channel, so I was able to watch the presser that way, which is funny because I always have to wait hours to see it come out on social media. And somebody did ask, I don't know who the reporter was, but they did ask if this could be like about a retirement tour and stuff like that, to which Ovi diverted the question jokingly to Ted Leonsis, who was part of the whole press event for Ovechkin. This is the ultimate question to ask for people to chew on until September, because remember, the regular season starts at the end of September this season. I've been saying it on social media. I think it'll start Tuesday, September 29th. Please let the home opener for the Capitals be on October 1st because it's my birthday. But anyways, we'll find that out probably in the next week or two. In your mind, when you heard Ovechkin say that, when he was asked that, do you think there will be, if he does sign, if there comes a point this season where he goes, you know what? This is going to be the last year. Let's turn it into a retirement tour. Do you think that's something where we'll hear about it during the season, or are we just going to continue to play a guessing game?
My guess is, first of all, I said before today, I thought there was a 70% chance Ovechkin was going to call it at quits after this year. After hearing the presser today, I think maybe it's 50. I think it's about as likely he comes back as he retires. I would suspect if he does decide to retire, I think you'll know about the All-Star break. Because I think, he'll probably, he'll realize, sometimes he skips the All-Star game. And obviously he didn't partake in the Olympics or the Four Nations the last couple of years. So I think he would use it as a platform to announce his retirement. That said, he basically mentioned during the presser that he said he was debating with his wife a 1 or 2 year deal. And like I said, I think the reason he picked a 1 year deal is it was easier cap wise for the team. I don't necessarily think he's just committing to 1 year. I think he just figured that this way, no one had to be cut or traded if for doing a 2 year deal. If he did 2 years for $9 million a piece, then they would have to clear like $5 million in cap room for next year, which means at least two or three players would have gone. This way, he probably figures they could keep more talent on the roster. And, he can do it all again next year. Obviously, it's kicking the can down the next year, but he could also sign for less money next year to kind of make up for that 4.75 million that's getting punted. So, but yeah, no, I think there will be. I think if he's silent as he was this year, I don't think there's retirement pending. I think I said this last year. I think it still applies this year. It's going to depend on if he's a productive. If he's healthy and if the team is any good. And I think, obviously, I think the last one is going to be yes. Is he going to be healthy? Who knows? Is he going to be still as productive? He's going to get less ice time, but he's got more talent to work with too. Teams can't shade him as much on the power play anymore with guys like Tuck and Kyrou, playing around. So, I think yes, you'll know by next March. You may not know definitively, but I think you'll have a pretty good idea, like you did last year. Because I think, like I said, as you know, I've been on the soapbox saying this would not be his last year, dating back, I think, to last October. I didn't think this was it, and I don't think it's going to be it, barring one of those other three things.
Yeah, and I was the schmuck who was going, my gut tells me it's the end. But you know
Well,
what though?
you did better than Darren Dreger.
Yes, I did. Well, see, the thing is, though, it's like, here's the thing. I didn't go out onto like Twitter and post Ovi's not coming back. I used this podcast, this platform here to say, my gut says this, but I'm not 100% sure the route Ovechkin's gonna go. And so it left me a little bit more protected and cushioned because I did not outright say, oh, it's over. But
Well, and you also weren't the only one to say it, dating, going up. I mean, I pretty much knew, that last weekend and against Pittsburgh and Columbus, reading his quotes. I mean, it's pretty obvious the only reason he would consider retirement is the Caps did absolutely nothing. And, the sense I got from today was Ted Leonsis wanted one more run at the Cup. And I think, it makes sense when he says that after the team didn't do a whole lot last season to kind of go all in. And I think Ted at some point said the rebuild is over. We're going to spend money and we're going to be a lot better. And I think that's why you saw, the team spent 30 plus million in the last couple of weeks. And I think, guys like, Tuck is signed, probably said for 8 years. Kyrou's got 5 years. So all these guys are not going away, even if Ovi goes away this year or next. This is a pretty good team with or without him. And I think that, once Ovechkin saw the massive improvement, I mean, I think all he wanted, I know this past year, I think that the kind of thinking was it would be tough for him to leave when they didn't even get one last shot at the playoffs. And, I think he really wants to win another Stanley Cup before he goes back to the KHL. And, as I said, I think if the Caps are really good and they're going to stay competitive next year, which I think they probably will, it's going to be tough for him to leave unless it's injury or his production falls off the table. That remains to be seen. But, I think one of the questions is going to be answered. Yes, they're going to be competitive for the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I just want to throw this obscured fact out there. The Capitals put up some infographics leading into the presser, and one of them was that Ovechkin is five assists away from passing Nicklas Backstrom for first all time on the team in assists. if Nicklas Backstrom plays this upcoming season in Sweden, and Ovechkin, this is Ovechkin's last season, and he doesn't play in the KHL, but we know he is, both Ovechkin and Backstrom will be eligible to enter the Hockey Hall of Fame together in 2030. It won't happen because we know Ovechkin's going to play in Russia for at
Oh
least a
yeah,
year,
I mean,
but
the thing is, Ovechkin is like, since his early days, he's basically said he was going back to Russia
yeah.
to finish his career. I
But
mean, it's
I wanted to throw that tidbit out there just because apparently the NHL posted incorrect information about Nicklas Backstrom being eligible for the Hall of Fame this upcoming year for 2027. Because Backstrom played in Sweden this past season, he played 45 games. He is not eligible to go into the Hockey Hall of Fame until 2029. Granted, he does not play
well,
this upcoming season.
I will also throw out there is an exemption. The Hall of Fame is used sparingly, and I suspect
So,
when Ovechkin retires, wherever, like basically they waive the eligibility period. He's going to be really close to having his eligibility waiver granted, just because, and it's going to be, he's going to spend a year or two in the K. So it's not like he's going to go right from the NHL to the Hall of Fame anyway.
who is the head of
He
the
basically,
selection committee? Who is the head of the
was
selection
it Mike?
committee? It's Mike Gartner.
I believe it, right, exactly.
Gartner, and
So
I
yeah.
actually interviewed him his first year taking over. It wasn't like really an interview that I can post up, but it was for the Caps 50th anniversary. My question was selected, and my question was, will, when Ovechkin, Crosby, and Jágr all retire, will they get exemptions and be put in the Hall of Fame immediately? To which he said no, even though the waiver thing is still shown, or the exemption is still shown on the website, they actually voted and eliminated the exemption rule.
Yeah, we'll
So
see.
there's
We'll
a
see.
three. So I'm saying that because Gartner said that to me directly and pointedly. He was very stern with his answer to me.
We'll see though.
But we'll
Like I said,
see.
it. Yeah, and like I said, it's, he's not going right for the NHL. He's going to have a waiver period of being in the KHL anyway. So it's not like, it's not like he's going to go. Gretzky went right from the NHL to the Hall of Fame. That's not going to be the case anyway.
Yeah. Now here's the
But I
question.
said
Do we get to finally do it to Jágr? If Jágr gets it, then
well, see,
Ovechkin gets it.
well, the thing is, I would not think, I would not think Jágr gets, well, obviously he would have gotten the exemption by now.
But he's still
Crosby,
playing, that's why.
yeah, but you could still, he's not playing the NHL. There's a big difference between playing in the Czech League and playing in the NHL. You could grant it, technically he's been gone from the NHL for years, and even though it is the Hockey Hall of Fame, there's still, as much as I love Mike Gardner, I the we all know the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee is a very, very quirky group, and their selections are not always in line with what most people would do. So I wouldn't rule it out. I just, yes, they probably don't want to encourage the quote unquote exemption, but it's probably would be whenever Ovi is retired from the K. It would not be Ovi is leaving the NHL, we're putting him in the Hall of Fame, now he's going to the KHL. It would be whenever the end of his KHL run is, would probably be when the waiver would. So technically, yes, it would be a waiver, but it's not like he's stepping right from Washington going to the Hall of Fame. I think it would be going from Dynamo to the Hall of Fame. But that's another question. But like I said, it's going to be unusual because, obviously Gretzky left and he left. This is not, we're going to have probably 1 or 2 years of Ovi in
In the
Moscow
K, yeah.
after 1 or 2 years in Washington. Perhaps more. I'm not even go, I would not, I think it's at least, I would think there's a pretty good shot he's back for a year or two. And if he's close to 1,000, it's really hard for me to think he would walk away again.
Yeah.
I don't think it's very likely, but if he can put up that kind of production the next 2 years, get within, say 20 goals of 1,000, it's going to be really hard to step away.
Yeah. So with that, we have given you a lot of things to think about.
Cliffhangers.
Lineups for the Capitals, what could they do? What could the goaltending be like? Is this Ovechkin's last year? You have until the end of September to mull all this over. Maybe not so much about the Hall of Fame stuff. You can cool your jets on that one. Don't stress about the Hall of Fame stuff. But with that, before I say where can people find you, there are a lot of thanks that need to go out from us. Number one, obviously, goes to Toro Masamune. He is my co-host. We all know he cannot be on every episode because he is a Hollywood actor, doing the grind. You know, he has my support, just like I have his support with the show. So big, huge shout out and thank you to Toro Masamune. Obviously, to you, Ted, Bill Meltzer, Mike Ajello, Zach Phillips, Max Miller, Rob Del Mundo, Murray Pam. A lot of hockey hot stove people, to be brutally honest with you. Huge thank you to Jeff Merrick. Hopefully one day I can get him on the show along with some others that I would really love to get on the show, like Tarek El-Bashir. I've talked to him about getting him on, same with Alan May. Huge thank you to everybody who has listened this season. It means a lot. So with that, Ted, where can the people find you on the social medias and your work? Because you did just have an article come out today.
I did. I was after the presser, I had a hot take on the Alex Ovechkin press conference. I'm sure there'll be a lot more, but it'll be a hockey hot stove. Lots of Caps content, lots of other content coming. Other big summer, you know, obviously with expansion coming down, that was the other, you know, we'll
Yeah,
see
we'll talk about
where
that in
next.
September.
Exactly. That's when you know, you got the car in midair. It's like to be continued. Also on Twitter at Ted Starkey. So, you know, there is no off season. It just slows down a bit, but there's a lot of stuff to go do this summer and a lot of questions to be answered. Perhaps not so much anymore in Washington, but elsewhere. So it's going to be an interesting couple months. And like you said, we'll be back at the end of September. Schedule should come out in 2 weeks and or next week, I should say. And then we'll see what the potential Ovechkin tour would be and then where we go from there.
And of course, you can follow me on everything at the Lindenbaum 75, and for the show, for TXHT specific, at TXHT underscore hockey, or just TXHT hockey and TXHTHockey.com. So this is our season. This is like the part two season finale. Again, thank you for Toru for doing it a couple weeks ago. Ted, to you for doing this. And again, thanks to everyone who has been a part of the show. If I missed you, I do greatly apologize. But we'll be back next season in September, probably around the training camp time before the season actually starts. And stay tuned because once the schedule is released, we will have our 32 and 32, where we release a team preview leading up to the season opener. So, like I said, I predict September 29th. We'll see if I'm right. Woot woot. So, with that, until next time, we will see you on the ice.